everybody, and welcome to Books Unbound, the podcast where we unbind books to get to their hearts. With your hosts, us, it's Ariel and...
Raylene.
Hey.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
I believe we have a truly action-packed episode today. Things unfolded this week in a way I never could have expected.
Oh.
And every time that something happened, I was like, well, I'm going to tell the pod about that. So... It's been a crazy week. I'm very excited to tell everyone about some of these fun things that happened. But Raylene, I'd love to start with you. What's going on over there? Mm. How's life in the big mountain?
That makes my life sound a lot cooler than it actually is. Just surrounded by mountains, as one does here in BC. But yeah, my week hasn't been like the most eventful. Yours is probably going to be much more interesting, but... Next week, I'll finally be able to tell you guys about this party that I've been planning for my friend because it's happening this week. So this is the final few days before the party is happening. I've made everything I need to make. The only thing that's left to be done is to buy food and then present the food to the people at the party. So I'm feeling pretty good. It's been so busy and so hectic, but now I'm finally like, I can relax. I'm finally at peace. Yeah, it's crazy how many things I've had to crochet for this party. I don't know if I've said that yet, but I've had to crochet many things. And I've had to expand my crochet knowledge very quickly in a very scary way, but it was lots of fun.
I think it's really funny that you've had kind of like crochet emergencies where it's like, when have you ever needed to speed crochet?
It's true. Yeah. Actually, this episode will come out after the party has already happened. So even if there's a chance that my friend listens to the podcast, which she doesn't, I can say one thing that I've had to crochet. One thing I've crocheted is a frog hat. Which I'm sure I will post a picture of it on the Instagram because it's iconic.
Okay,
although the one that I crocheted is actually for my friend. The one that I'll be wearing in the picture or that I will show on the Instagram will be a different frog hat, but it's similar. So you'll get the idea. Very complicated. I don't want to get into it. Let's move on.
There's so many steps. Okay, well, we will check in next week about how the party went and everything, because like we mentioned in another episode, Raylene told me all about it a couple of weeks ago, and it's just the most intricate. What is that? Isn't that in Parks and Recreation as well? Like, somebody reviews Ben Wyatt's game as punishingly intricate.
I feel like that is true for this too.
Yeah, I kind of feel that with your party, but in a really fun, great way.
It's gonna be fun. But yeah, we've talked about it too. We're like, what if she like just doesn't figure out one of the like, what if it could just ruin everything? Like, everything could fall apart. But it'll be fine.
Yeah,
it'll be fine.
No, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be awesome. Okay, well, I want to start with one thing that I knew was gonna be happening this weekend. Something that like I had planned to do this weekend, and that was to take a marbling workshop. So we will insert some B-roll footage here so you can all see what I'm talking about. But basically, as you guys know, I have done a few bookbinding workshops over the last few years, and I really enjoy them, really love them. Well, this is like in the same world of paper marbling, but it's just doing the papers that you would use for like covers or end papers in books in the traditional hand-done style. And I just counted them, Raylene.
Oh gosh.
I made 64 papers.
Oh my gosh.
Which is wild. Like, it is wild. I was industrious.
Oh my goodness. They're so cool.
They are so beautiful. I am honestly extremely proud.
You should be. They look really awesome and different. Like, they're very...
It was a lot of work, but it was really, really fun work. Mm-hmm. And now I have this giant stockpile of paper that I can use. And I was texting Raylene a bit about this yesterday. And very rightly so, Raylene asked, like, what are you going to do with all of that paper? Right? And I do think a big part of it was like not about the end result necessarily. Mm-hmm. It was just about the process of learning a new skill.
It's just cool that you ended up with so many of them while also learning a new skill.
Yeah, exactly. Like, instead of just learning something and then not getting to walk away with anything. Like, it's the exact opposite. We walked away with all of it. Which is really awesome. So one of the reasons that I have so many is because I was really trying to, like, perfect the technique.
Yeah.
So it would be like, okay, I really want to try, like, this bouquet effect. And I just do it over and over and over again to try and really learn how to do it.
Yeah.
But also just because it was really fun. And it really clicked with my brain in a happy way where I was just like, no, I like this. Like, I get it. I like it. And I want to do more and more and more and more. So there was 5 people in the workshop. And, like, on the first day, I think I had made something like let's call it 30 papers. Mm-hmm. The person next to me had made, like, 25 papers.
Yeah.
And then the other 3 people on the other table had each made, like, 15 papers. Mm. So me and my table mate were definitely, like, we were just, like, going really fast.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do have I have a lot. Anyways, it was so much fun. I really, really recommend, if people are curious about paper marbling, taking a workshop, because, like, it was just so cool. It was really interesting. And now, like I said, I have all of these papers that I'm gonna get to do fun stuff with. Oh, right. And so part of it is just, it was just a natural byproduct of learning how to do this was that you got a lot of papers. But things that I can do with it are make books and use them as the covers and end papers of journals and stuff like that. Cards, I can make, like, Christmas cards or birthday cards for the rest of my life with these papers. But also wrapping paper. Like,
oh,
imagine
cute.
Getting a present wrapped in this.
Oh my God.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I can be like, I made that paper. Like, that's really, really neat. So there is quite a few things that you could do with it. But, and I said to Raylene, I was like texting, I was like, no, you're right. Like, no one needs fancy paper, right? You don't need it. It's just, like, a fun thing
to have.
It's just
a fun thing
to have. But Raylene texted back and was like, I don't know. I think you might be wrong. I think Ariel does need fancy paper.
Exactly. Some people deserve and need fancy paper, and I think you're one of those people. Okay, well, I have a question for you, and this...
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because you have so much of it already, but my question is, would you be able to make more, like, just by yourself at home? Like, do you have everything you need, or do you need really special equipment for it?
Great question. You don't need a lot of special equipment. Like, you need a tray, like a cookie sheet kind of tray, like something with thick like sides that go up pretty high, not pretty high, but just a little bit high. So you really just need a tray, paints, but you could, like, you get the paints at Michael's, like, it's like normal paint, and and water. So those are the main ingredients. You need to buy 2 special things. Mm-hmm. One of them is this thing called carrageenan, if I'm pronouncing that right. It's made from seaweed. And it's like a thickener. It's like it, when you blend it with water, it makes the water kind of gel-like.
Okay.
And so you would do that, and then the next day you would use that, and you would, like, pour that into the tray. And then when you pour the paint on, it stays on the top and it doesn't sink. It floats. It makes the paint float.
Ooh.
And then you need another very specific ingredient called alum. And people might have heard of alum because it's used for pickling as well. So it's like this emulsifier thing, or it acts as a mordant or an adhesive. So you take the blank piece of paper, and you can do this with any kind of paper.
Mm-hmm.
So you just take your blank piece of paper, you apply the alum to it, which again is just, it's like a powder that you add to water, mix it up, and then you just sponge it on a piece of paper and let that sit for like a few hours. And then when you dip the paper in or lay it onto the paint, that layer makes the paint stick to the paper.
I see. I didn't realize it was like a water paint paper situation. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So you have a vat of liquid that you're putting paint onto and creating, like, in a bathtub kind of thing. But it's small. It's like a normal, like a, it's like the size of paper. You're creating your designs there. And then you're laying the paper onto the water. It's so weird. And then you take it off, and then you go to the sink and you wash off the paper. Like, it seems so crazy because, like, the number one rule is obviously don't get your paper wet.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like, in our normal life is don't get paper wet. But this is all about soaking paper and everything. So
that's
it is. It's delicate and fragile. And some people did have, like, they did rip their papers because you have to be really careful with it. I got lucky. I didn't rip any of mine.
You're just a superstar. Any kind of book binding, like, thing, no. You just are good at it somehow.
I really it clicks with my brain. I just, like, really loved it. You know when you, like, I don't know, when you start doing something and it makes sense to you, mm-hmm. you're like, yeah, I get something about that. I get.
Totally.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. So it isn't complicated. Mm-hmm. It's really not complicated, really. Like, it's a tray of water with a bit of chemical in it and another little water chemical thing. You can get those on bulk from, like, marbling people.
Well, that's cool.
You can just order them.
That's good to know.
And then
so,
you could,
like,
totally do it at home.
50 years when you've run out of paper, you can make some more.
Yeah, in 25 years when I'm ready for round two. I would love to do that, though, because in the workshop, one thing that was, like, pretty much out of my control was the colors of the paints.
Ooh, yeah.
So, like, you know, the workshop teacher who I am obsessed with, her name is Rhonda. She's the best, and I will link her in the show notes and in the description. Also, there will be some more photos if you want to see, like, 4K photos that I took during the weekend on my Instagram. But I'll tag her there as well. But, you know, she picked the colors that she has.
Yeah.
And I would pick different colors. Probably. And I did start mixing colors on the last day because I was like, probably no one will care now. I literally asked on the first day, I was like, am I allowed to mix colors? She's like, no.
And day two? Sure.
And then I did on the second day and she's like, yeah, it's fine now because, like, there's only a few hours left and this is the paint we have. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that would be fun to, like, do it on my own time, getting to pick my own colors and stuff. Anyways, I'm obsessed, and it's very much inspired me to, like, make a book, because now I can use this paper as my own end papers and
so
stuff.
So cool.
My next step, actually, the final step in the process is just to put this in between heavy books so that they get flattened, nice. Because I just brought them home yesterday, and they're all wet. All right, let's start with... Well, we've started already, actually. Let's continue with a book haul, shall we?
Yeah, why not?
I think that you have a book that you got.
I do. I have just one book that I picked up over the past week sometime. I got Bad Cree by Jessica Johns, which I've just, like, kind of, shiny. I don't know too much about it, but the basic plot from what I know is that the main character is this young woman who lives by herself in Vancouver, actually, which is fun for me. I love reading about stories set in Vancouver. And she starts having, like, dreams. And then when she wakes up from the dreams, she's, like, has something in her hand that was in the dream. Like, she's able to, like, pull items out of her dreams and stuff. And then I guess it gets kind of spooky and kind of scary from there, because this is kind of like a horror thriller book, I'm pretty sure. So that's all I know. I don't want to go into it knowing too much. But yeah, I picked this up because I want more spooky books. So I'm just preparing for the season ahead. But that's it. That's all I got. But I'm very excited about it.
That seems really cool. I've seen people talking about it. I think people are liking that book.
Yeah.
I got a few things that I'm excited to tell you about. The first and most exciting was sent to me by Tundra Books. Thank you so much to Tundra, and specifically to Julia over at Tundra. Julia saw that I had talked about Anne of Green Gables on my Instagram. And then she messaged me and she was like, hey, Ariel, I see that you like Anne. And I was like, I sure do, Julia, I sure do. And she was like, here at Tundra, we publish a couple editions of Anne. Would you want me to maybe send you one? And I'm like, yes, Julia.
Yes, of course.
And so she sent, I'm so excited. She sent me the hardcover editions that are published by Tundra. So they are so, so beautiful. And it's so wonderful to have kind of a high quality hardcover version of the series. They're so pretty. These actually do have very fancy end papers, which I will show in the B-roll as well. But yeah, they're all super stunning.
Fantastic.
They're so beautiful. And if you want to check them out, I'll link to the editions that they are. They were gifted to me. This is not sponsored, but they were sent to me for free. I did want to mention, I feel a moral responsibility to mention that there is one really strange thing going on with this series. So they're stunning, right? We've got the book. It's a cloth spine.
Yeah.
Which you can kind of tell. It's a cloth spine. And when you open it, it's got a beautiful end paper design on the inside. Mm-hmm. And then we've got a ribbon that matches the colors of the book on in each book. So it's just beautifully made.
Yeah.
Except for the first book. Anne of Green Gables, the first book in the series, is not cloth. Bound?
What?
Like the spine of it is printed to look like cloth,
no.
But it is not cloth like the other ones.
Is there no ribbon?
It does not have end papers, and it does not have a ribbon.
No, what?
And listen, it's still a really lovely book. It really is still a lovely book. It's a great design for a book, and it has very nice feel. Like, it feels really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very surprising that it is different than the others.
Yeah.
And I asked if I just happened to get a weird copy, if there is a matching edition. And Julia confirmed that the first book is published separately to the rest of the series, which makes a lot of sense because they probably sell this book a lot.
Yeah.
And they probably don't sell the rest of the series very often. So it makes sense to me that they're probably getting this printed somewhere else, and this is probably cheaper for them to print. But I just felt like if I didn't tell people and then they got it, they would be mad at me for being like, Ariel, you tricked me. No, I did not. I have not tricked you. I've given you all of the information. And I will say, like, on the shelf, you can't tell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't. It looks like it's they, like, printed it with, like, the texture on it. So it looks... It is funny. It's odd, but look at, they're so beautiful.
Yeah, they're really nice.
They're so beautiful. So I'm very excited to add these to my shelves. That's very exciting. Okay. And then they also sent me Anne Dares, adapted by Callie George, pictures by Abigail Halpin. This was a surprise that they added into the box. It says inspired by Anne of Green Gables. So this is also published by Tundra. And I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah.
It looks like a kid's book? I think it's a children's version of, like, the book.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Actually, no, I lied because it says chapter one. It was over a year now since Anne had first come to Green Gables. So that's interesting.
It could just be a very big adaptation, very changed story.
I think it's that. In the fifth of a charming chapter book series that reimagines Ella Montgomery's Anne of Green Gables for early readers. Anne learns a valuable lesson about real bravery.
Ooh.
Nice. So there you go. If you are looking for some beautiful kids' books, this is very beautiful. All right. I also have here, I bought this book, Slouching Towards Bethlehem.
Oh, is that Joan Didion? Okay, I was like, that sounds so familiar. Yeah.
Anyway. I've got a couple things to say about this. Number one, I swear to God, I thought I owned this. I really thought I owned this. And there's still a little part of my brain that thinks I do own it.
It's possible. Your book situation is pretty terrifying right now. My book
situation has gotten out of control lately because I've just got piles and piles of books everywhere while the new shelves are being finished. But, like, I can't find it. If I do own it, I can't find it.
Yeah.
So I started, so this is a little bit of a mixing into currently reading, but I started listening to the audiobook version of this.
Oh, nice.
I don't remember where I heard it, but somebody mentioned that the audiobook for Slouching Towards Bethlehem is narrated by Diane Keaton.
Oh my gosh.
Miss Diane Keaton is over there reading this thing. And I was like, I would like to do that. So I signed up for an Audible free trial, which I've done probably 10 times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't want to ever pay for Audible because I don't want to support Amazon in any way. But annoyingly, it's an Audible original, which I think should be illegal.
I agree.
It should be illegal.
There's got to be another way.
There's something ugly about the Audible originals that I just think is really, really dark. It just feels like dystopian. It goes against what we're doing with books to have like, well, this is a really cool version of the book, but you can only read it if you give money to Amazon. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, what about the library? But the libraries don't even get
never
them.
Yeah,
that's spooky stuff.
It is.
Anyways, I am listening to it on a free trial so as to not give them any money, and I just use like loads of different emails.
Yeah, I think everybody can relate to that.
Yeah. Slouching towards Bethlehem, I'm like probably a quarter of the way through. It's very good. It's obviously very good. Joan Didion's very good, but it is very like, I'm really realizing how little I know about the 1960s.
Oh yeah.
Because I feel like I know about the 60s. You know, you think about the 60s, you think about the Beatles and Elvis and Marilyn Monroe. And you know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's certain things that come into your head. No, I don't know anything about the 60s.
That was all a lie.
Like, there's this one essay. The reason that I got the physical copy, by the way, is because I was listening to it and there was loads of lines that I wanted to underline. Mm,
yeah.
And then I came into my office and basically ripped my office apart trying to find it so that I could underline it. I was like, I don't think I own it. So when I was out, I picked it up. Okay, I can't find it. But there's she's talking about an actor, and I don't even remember his name. But she's talking about an actor, and she's like, why are we so obsessed with this
And you're
actor?
Like, who the hell is this guy?
And that's the thing. I'm like, who?
I love that.
I'm like, wait, are we obsessed? But she's like, it's so strange that we are all so invested in this guy. And I'm like, who?
I love that.
Oh, that's okay. Anyways, it's very good so far. I'm learning. And then the final book that I am going to haul leads me into my story.
Oh, okay.
So my friend that I've talked about on the podcast before, Jamie, runs a publishing press called Nevermore Press.
Yeah.
I've talked about them, and I will link them in the show notes as well. And you know what? I'm going to write that down. Nevermore. And I also said I would link to the Anne books. And I also, what was the other thing? Oh, to my marbling teacher. Okay. Don't worry, guys. Yeah, those links will be there. So my friend Jamie was hosting an event for a new book that was being published by Nevermore Press on Thursday night in Lunenburg.
Okay.
And Connor and I thought that would be a fun thing to do. Let's do the drive and go out and go to Lunenburg. Before we go to Lunenburg, I get a call from Jamie, which is rare.
Yeah, we don't often call each other friends people. These days.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, what was that? I actually missed the call. And so I text them back and I'm like, hey, sorry, I missed your call. I was showering. ¿Qué pasa? And they're like, do you have a minute to call? And I'm like, yeah, go ahead. And they call me and I'm like, oh, they really want to call, not text. Yeah. What's happening?
I'm scared.
Basically, the event was pitched as a conversation between the author and another person.
Mm.
The other person got sick and dropped out of the event 2 hours before it was going to happen. And Jamie calls me and says, would you host it?
Oh my God.
And I'm like, but Jamie, I have not read the book and I need to leave soon.
There are some problems.
And Jamie's like, no, no, listen, it's really a short book. I'm sure you could read it.
Oh, wait, you have... I thought they were going to say, don't worry, you don't have to read it.
I know. I thought that too. That's what I was trying to angle towards. I'm like, man, maybe you could just give me the questions and I'm happy to sit there and ask someone questions. But Jamie was like, you definitely have to read the book because the book is about grief and it's about the author's mother dying. Oh, it's a sensitive topic.
Yeah.
So you definitely need to read it. And I was like, okay, but I only have half an hour before I have to literally get in my car.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, I bet you could do it. And I'm like, okay.
Oh my
so
God.
I read Oubliette by Hannah Godfrey. Hannah Godfrey is a writer and artist living in Winnipeg, Manitoba. She is the curator of Gallery Bueller Gallery in St. Boniface Hospital. Her book, Oubliette, published this year by Nevermore Press, is a collection of fragments gathered during the illness of Hannah's mother and a reflection on the grief at her mother's death. So I read it, Ray.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's unexpectedly tiny. Read this book. I suddenly just like halted everything that was going on, sat for half an hour and read it,
yeah,
and made notes and wrote down questions wow. as they occurred to me. It is a very short book in that, I mean, well, first of all, it's 107 pages,
yeah,
but you'll see in the flip through, yes. like it's like one line or on a couple of pages, there's like short paragraphs,
yeah,
but most of them is just one or two lines on each page. So it is very short. Yeah. I was definitely, anyone would be able to read it quickly. So I read it, wrote down my questions, got in the car, drove to Lunenburg, crazy. And hosted that damn event.
Oh my gosh. Woo! How did it go?
It went so well. It went so well. It was so much fun. First of all, I love Lunenburg Bound. I just love that shop. And I felt really excited that now it's technically on my resume that I have hosted an event at Lunenburg Bound. Yeah. So that was super. Secondly, I'm obsessed with Hannah Godfrey. Oh. She was so wonderful. She was so wonderful. Her book is beautiful. It's a really gorgeous book. It's a really beautiful book. It's a really funny book. There's a lot of very funny moments. There's a lot of silly moments, but there's also a lot of really powerful, sad, touching moments. And during our conversation, she said something that like is definitely going to stick with me, because she mentioned how grief is a lot like falling in love, where when you're falling in love, everything that you hear, everything that you see feels so romantic. Like every song that you listen to, you're like, that's exactly how I feel. Every movie is like, yes, this is love. Like everything has that rose tint.
Yeah.
With grief, it's the same thing in the other direction, where it's just like every song you hear hits you so much harder, and every movie you see about grief or that deals with grief hits you so much harder.
Totally.
And so the book has a lot of quotations in it, and the way that the book was made was really cool. So basically, Hannah's mother got really sick and had an illness for a very long time, and Hannah kept a notebook full of these fragments. Whenever her mom would say something that was funny, she'd write it down. So she had quotes from her mom or just memories that she'd remember something and she'd write it down. And anytime that she encountered a quotation about grief or not even necessarily just about grief, but about this topic, she would write it down in her book, in this notebook. And then basically that notebook is this finished book.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah. So it's like really cool the way that it was made as well. I really loved talking to Hannah. I really loved getting to do the event. It was also like a reading emergency, and I love a reading emergency. Like I was saying with your crocheting emergency.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I really come alive.
You only have half an hour to read this book. Go.
And then you have to sit in front of 30 people and convincingly ask intelligent questions. I'm like,
yeah, you know,
I'm up.
That sounds like
challenge.
Possibly my worst nightmare. So I'm glad that it happened to you and not me.
And now it is signed. It says, "Dear Ariel, thank you for being a wonderful host."
Aww.
Hannah. So that was really fun. I had such a fun time, but that entire evening was now taken up to this event that I did not see coming, right? The next day, or that night, Jamie finds out, so this is Thursday night, finds out that the person who was going to host the next day's event, so the person who bailed was, or who got sick, they were going to host three events. Lunenburg, Halifax, and Cape Breton. The three stops.
Yeah.
They dropped out of all of them.
Oh my gosh.
So I jumped in 2 hours notice and hosted the Lunenburg Bound one.
Yeah.
Jamie then asked me the next morning to host the Halifax one.
Yeah.
So without planning on it, we drove into Halifax on Friday and I hosted another event.
Oh my gosh.
For the book. And which was great too, because I got to read through sections of the book again. Yeah, yeah. I got to think more about my questions, and I and I think that the conversation more. I think the conversation was really good on the second day as well, and I formatted the questions in a different way to sort of try and freshen it up for the author as well, because like you don't want to be asked the same questions two nights in a row. So I was like, we're obviously going to talk about similar things, it's the same book, it's the same author, but yeah, is there a different way that I can frame this? And I was happy with how I framed the second conversation. It went really well. But again, suddenly Friday was taken up by this whole event.
Shoot.
But it was awesome. It was such a great night. And afterwards, we got dinner with Jamie and with the author. And I say we because Connor came along as well. And Connor took photos and stuff. I originally was going to photograph and video the event.
Oh.
And then I got promoted to hosting them.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, so this is a really special little book. It's now going to like really live in my heart as a very special book in my life. But I do really recommend it if it sounds at all interesting to you. I thought it was really great. So I will also link to that book. Link to book. I will also link to that in the show notes and description, because how wonderful was that?
That,
isn't that funny, really?
It's crazy. That's a classic Ariel moment. I don't know how to explain it any other way. That just makes sense. Like, you're just like given a couple seconds to do something and you pull it together and do a great job. That's
very complimentary.
That's an Ariel right there.
That's very complimentary of you. All right. Let's transition to what we have finished this week, because we've kind of, this was the first book that I finished this week. Let's talk about Mother Thing by Ainsley Hogarth.
Indeed.
This was a book we decided last week we would buddy read. Our plan was to meet this week having finished it. And, oh, you guessed it, I failed. I failed miserably.
Yeah.
I did not finish it because of these unforeseen events.
Yeah, a lot of things happened, so it's fair.
Before we recorded the podcast, I said, Raylene, I'm wondering if you could show me a little bit of mercy. I didn't finish the book. I will explain why on the podcast, and I'm wondering if we could just help me save face a little bit. I don't want to be embarrassed in front of everyone and have to tell everyone I failed. Would that be okay? And Raylene hesitated for like a really long time and said, I don't know. Like, clearly wants to say no, but I am her friend, so she can't just say no. And I was like, wow, okay, I will show my shame in front of everyone. So here it is, everyone. My shame, I did not finish the buddy read. Raylene did finish it, though, so let's do the info bit.
Ainsley Hogarth is a Canadian writer living in Toronto. She has an undergraduate degree in English literature and philosophy and a master's in creative writing. She currently has 4 published works, including her most recent novel, Normal Women, which was published on October 10th of this year. First of all, I also just want to defend myself. I didn't want to have to lie to the people, which is why I wanted for us to all come clean here. Also, because it's hard to talk about a buddy read when it wasn't really a buddy read in the end. Our plan was to like check in halfway.
Yeah.
And then, but now I finished the book.
Only communication.
Yeah, but now I finished the book. So like we didn't get to have that little moment of, well, I wonder what's going to happen next. So I don't know. I feel like it fell apart a little bit, but I finished the books. So I don't want to say too much because it's not like we didn't both. How much did you read, I guess, is the question.
I was almost at half.
Okay. Okay. So I don't want to give too much away, but I'll just kind of like briefly talk about what the book is about. So the main character is this woman who I'm not sure exactly how old she is, but I would say like probably 30s, somewhere in her 30s or something like that, early 30s maybe. And she is married and she and her husband are living with her mother-in-law, who they've moved in with her because she's not doing so well. She has some mental health issues. And so they move in with her to kind of take care of her. But right at the beginning of the book, she commits suicide. So it's really intense right from the beginning, and she's kind of helping her husband deal with his grief and all this stuff. But then it gets kind of twisted because she comes home one day and he's like acting really weird, And she's like, what's going on with you? Like, why are you like hiding your hand? Like, what is going on? And he's like, okay, I have to tell you something. And his whole thing is his mom is still here, like living in the basement. And the way he explains it is kind of unclear. Like, is this really happening? Is she a ghost? Is this all in his head? Like, what is going on? So that's kind of the basic premise for the book. And so it's just, you follow the story from the main character's point of view, her trying to like help, trying to understand, trying to help him, you know, do better and all this kind of stuff. I don't know how I feel about this book. It was a weird book. How are you feeling about it so far?
So far, I'm finding it very readable. It's a little bit more, it's like a lot chattier than I thought it would be, if that makes sense. Like the main character, it's told from the first person. And so she's very like, here I am and I'm telling the story that happened. It just feels like, I do really feel her personality coming through, which is interesting. Like she's definitely very present. But yeah, I don't want to give thoughts until I finished it because it does feel like stuff is going to change and I don't want to.
Totally. Yeah. And I don't remember exactly when things like happen. So I don't want to give anything away to you either. But I will also say this book, I bought it because you had it and I knew that it sounded interesting and everything. But also it was in the horror section at the bookstore, which I was excited about. I was like, oh, sweet. Another horror book. I just want to put this out there. I don't think that this is really a horror book.
That's interesting.
For the most part, I would say it's kind of, it's very like Otessa Moshfeg-y, Moshfegian, if you will. And mostly because it's kind of like has that, you know, the main character is a little bit unreliable. Like you sometimes don't know if what she's saying or doing is like really true or like genuine. And there's like some gross parts, like the main character and her husband kind of have weird conversations sometimes where it's like, why are you guys even talking about this? So in some ways it reminds me of Otessa Moshfeg, but it's not like outright horror. It's not really like gory throughout. There are definitely a couple of moments, so like as you get deeper into the book you'll discover. But yeah, I wouldn't call it horror. I'd say it's more so just like unsound heroines, like, you know, bored housewife being slightly crazy maybe, but not necessarily horror. I don't know.
Did it feel Halloween-y to you? Like, would you have it as a... No. Okay, that's very
I really wouldn't. I would say it's not even a thriller. Like, I wouldn't even put it towards thriller, but it's somewhere more in that kind of like literary fiction with a little dash of madness is kind of more like, it's kind of like a domestic tension, not even suspense, but like there's just like, yeah, domestic tension literary fiction is what I would call it.
That's fascinating because it's definitely like marketed as a horror book. That's the reason that I picked it up, because I thought it was going to be a ghost book. And on the front, it says gory. Like someone quotes it as being gory and stuff. So
yeah, I was expecting a lot more because of that. And that's, I mean, I just find that interesting too, how publishing and kind of like how books are marketed can kind of just change the way you think about them a little bit. Cause I was expecting this to be like a gore fest cause it says gory right on the cover and just wasn't. So just putting that out there for people who might be interested.
On the inside from Publishers Weekly, they say, a masterfully crafted horror novel. This dark domestic drama packs a punch.
I think that's untrue. But that's okay. So all in all, I would say, like, I liked the book. I didn't love it. It was easy to read, definitely. And I feel like it was, like, a fun enough romp. But once again, just kind of not what I was looking for. I read Rebecca and then I read this and I was hoping for a ghost at least in both books. And I don't know if I really got one. Maybe, maybe in some ways, but yeah, it's tough.
That is kind of a running theme, isn't it? Like, is it a ghost or is it grief?
That's true.
A big theme in horror. I'm thinking of like Babadook. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
That movie has that theme. And I really like that movie. I remember when I watched it with my brother, we were like, oh my God, this is like a big commentary on like, is it an actual ghost?
Right.
Or is it, you are being hunted by your grief? Totally. You know what I mean? Like, that's a very interesting question.
It definitely is,
Okay, cool. Well, I will follow up next week with my final thoughts on the book as well. If people have read this one, they should let us know if they would quantify it as horror or not, because I guess, how would you define horror? If you don't define this as horror, how would you define horror?
Ooh, don't ask me these hard questions on the spot. Yeah, I mean, I guess like getting into the heads of people is definitely a big part of horror. So I guess it could count. It's just not what I look for when I'm reading horror. When I'm reading horror, I want more like outright spooks, I guess, and more like in your face horror. This is more subtle horror, I guess, if you had to had to say it. But yeah, I mean, a big part of horror is just like learning about people and learning about humanity and how they think. Like, that is the backbone of horror.
True.
It's like horror is on the surface is like blood and guts or whatever, but it all comes back to like people and humans deep down. So
I do know what you mean though, because like I've never thought about how I would define horror. But I do think fear would have to be a big part of it. Like,
oh, yeah.
If it's horror, I need to feel scared or like I need the author to be trying to make me scared, and that can come in different ways. But if you're not feeling the fear, then is it a horror?
It's true. I don't know. I'd have to think about that more.
Yeah. Same. All right, so you finished Mother Thing.
Yes.
What else did you finish this week?
The other book I read is so random and not Halloween themed at all. It just so happened that my library gave me the audiobook over the past week, and I was like, sure, I'll listen to this. So I listened to We Were Dreamers by Simu Liu. Simu Liu is a Canadian actor. He was raised by his grandparents in Harbin, China, until he was 5, when he moved to Ontario to live with his parents. After a failed accounting career in his 20s, he decided to switch to acting, and after dozens of small parts, he landed a role in the beloved series Kim's Convenience, which later led to him being cast as the lead in Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. Most recently, he appeared as a Ken in Greta Gerwig's Barbie. What a career that man has had. So this, yeah, like I said, this is just kind of random because my library gave me the audiobook and I decided to listen to it because that's, as I've said before, always my favorite way to listen to memoirs when it's read from the person's real voice. And it was really fun. I played so much Stardew Valley while listening to this audiobook and really, really ended up enjoying it. Like, I wasn't sure what to expect because I don't really know anything about his story other than, you know, what movies he's been in. But he has had quite the life. Like, he spent a lot of his childhood living with his grandparents, and he like loved his grandparents. He basically had no idea who his parents were because he just grew up. His parents had already moved to the States and then also Canada. They all ended up in Canada, obviously. And so but the first time he met his dad, he was like, who is this man? Wait, why is this man taking me with him? Like, it was, you know, kind of a spooky situation for a kid. And throughout the book, he has a lot of moments where he's talking about his childhood and kind of like traumatic things he went through. And he sounds like he's about to cry like so many times reading, like listening to the audiobook. Ooh. So it's a very emotional, like hard hitting kind of memoir while also being funny. And also, you know, just a kind of origin story of how he got into the Hollywood business.
Yeah.
So it was really a really good book, like really varied. And he goes through a lot of like his parents were quite abusive and bad to him when he was a kid, which is something I didn't know anything about. So definitely, you know, if you're not into that kind of thing, it's kind of like a sad book, but it was really, really good. And I found it to be a very interesting story and very easy to listen to, easy to read. So I recommend it. It was very good.
Hey, cool.
Yeah.
How does it rank amongst all of the other celebrity memoirs you've read this year?
What other ones have I read? I can't remember.
I'm counting a lot of the like chef books.
Oh yeah.
The Stanley Tucci one.
That's
and
true.
The Kitchen Confidential stuff like that. But maybe, I guess this is different.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I guess it is different.
Oh, the Elliot Page one.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, I would say this one ranks like firmly in the middle to high range. Like, I think I would say I like this more than Stanley Tucci, not as much as Kitchen Confidential, but much more than Page Boy. So
if nice. That's
yeah
that paints a picture.
Exactly. they're all over the place, but yeah, no, I definitely enjoyed it, and like I said, it's like a good balance of sad and funny and happy, and I feel like it, like he did a good job of kind of painting a picture of his pretty much his whole life in a pretty short book. Like, it's around 300 pages or less, maybe even, like, it's a pretty short, it was like 8-hour audiobook. Yeah, I definitely thought it was better than Page Boy, but that's the only other kind of like Hollywood one I feel like I've read, I guess, other than Stanley Tucci. But Stanley Tucci's was more about food than it was about being in the biz.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but yeah,
tricky.
But all in all, I really liked it, and it made me want to watch Kim's Convenience, so that's
oh, cool.
a good side effect, I think.
Did you have any other books to review?
Nope.
Okay, I have one more, and it is Ariel by Sylvia Plath. Sylvia Plath was a poet, novelist, and short story writer. She was born in 1932 and died in 1963. She is best known for her novel The Bell Jar and her poetry collections Ariel and The Colossus and Other Poems. She was born in Boston, Massachusetts, and has degrees from Smith College and Cambridge University Newham College. Sylvia Plath struggled with chronic clinical depression throughout her life, had several suicide attempts, was treated in psychiatric hospitals, and eventually died by suicide at the age of 30, a month after the publication of The Bell Jar. Ariel was published posthumously. That was one of the trickiest bios I've written.
No kidding. For
anyone, because Sylvia Plath is obviously so iconic, is so well loved, but also had such an interesting life, mm-hmm. and it has kind of like entered mythological status.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's hard to know, like, what to mention about her. There mm-hmm. is so much there. Like, I obviously wanted to mention her degrees because she was a scholar and a student for most of her life. Mm-hmm. And also in a time when not as many women were going to universities. And yeah, it's, like, amazing and cool that she was at Cambridge. I didn't know that.
And did also young, time, too. Yeah.
Yeah, really young. I was like, do I mention that she was married to Ted Hughes? Because that was a big part of her life. It's annoying when women are like constantly talked about with their partners. It's like she obviously had this whole life by herself. Yeah. But the Ted Hughes thing is a huge part of her life. Like your husband is a big part of your life,
oh,
right? 100%. And it's very controversial and there is evidence that he abused her and stuff. So did that add to the depression? And then it's like, do you talk about the clinical depression? I think with Sylvia, you have to.
It influenced a lot of her work, I would think.
It influenced so much of her work. Her work is about her struggles with clinical depression. Like, The Bell Jar is semi-autobiographical. Mm-hmm. So much of the stuff that happened in The Bell Jar actually happened to her. She had, what is that called? Oh, I forget the name of it. The correct term for it. Hold on. Electroconvulsive therapy to help with her depression. Yeah. And that's in the book. And it's scary. And it's like, it's all, God, this is what I mean. Like, it was so hard to write that biography. Or that, not biography, that bio. What's also funny is I own her biography, the one that was just published a couple of years ago called The Red Comet. It's like freaking 1,400 pages long. For a woman who only lived to 30.
Yeah.
She only lived to 30. You know what I mean? Like, it's like 30 years, 1,200 pages. It's wild.
That's a bit much.
And so I think that's all relevant to the book. Like, going into reading this, you're not just reading a random poetry collection. No, you're reading like Sylvia Plath's probably most famous poetry collection. And I just didn't like it very much. Mm. And that's fine. Do you know what I mean?
You can't like really everything just because it's, you know, renowned
iconic.
Or whatever. Yeah.
That's the thing. And like, me saying that I didn't like it has nothing to do with whether or not I think it's important, mm-hmm. whether or not I think it's valuable, or whether or not I get why people like it, or whether or not, you know what I mean? Like, I just personally don't want to read it again. I didn't find any poems in here where I was like, wow, that was stunning. I really want to memorize that. Or I have a note on my phone that's like favorite poems. Mm. And every time I read a poem that I really like and I'm like, oh my God, that was beautiful, I add it to that note.
Oh, nice.
I didn't read any here that I'm like, oh, I got to add it to the note. Though I think the one I liked the most was Nick and the Candlestick. I'll read a little bit of it. It starts, I am a miner, the light burns blue, waxy stalactites drip and thicken, tears. The earthen womb exudes from its dead boredom. Black bat airs wrap me, raggy shawls, cold homicides. They weld to me like plums. Old cave of calcium, icicles, old echoer, even the newts are white. And it goes on. That poem to me, I don't get what's going on, but I love the rhythm of it. Mm-hmm. And I was reading a lot of them out loud to Connor because I was like, I was really struggling with them when I was only reading them in my head.
Yeah.
So I like transferred to reading them out loud, and that definitely helped. And this one, I'm like, this is really fun to read. There's like a lot going on there. So I, you know, there were sections that I liked, but overall it didn't click in my head. Also, I do want to mention there's a high level of dodgy depictions of different races in here. Mm. It's weird. It is dodgy. And again, it was written in the 60s, and it was published after she died. So, like, she couldn't even do a defense of it if she wanted to. Like, there was no... Yeah. So I think that there's multiple elements going on there that I'm like, it is what it is. It came out a long time ago, and it's not, like, outrageously... It's just dodgy. It's just like, did we have to put that in there? Mm. Was that the best use of that? It's weird. But it did disarm me a few times where I was clear. I'm reading it in 2023, right? I'm reading this book a long time later, and I'm reading it like, what? I'm like, let me reread that. And then I would look stuff up and be like, did I misinterpret that? Mm. Why is that written that way? But no, it's like a thing that people have been writing about for a long time. Like, Sylvia Plath scholars are like, why did she keep talking about it? Like, she has like a little bit of it's not anti-Semitic necessarily, but she just like keeps comparing her depression to the Holocaust. And it's like really uncomfortable. Yeah. But it is what it is. It's a historic document. There it is. I didn't enjoy it.
I'm glad you finally read it though. Okay. Like, you Me knocked too. It off. It's funny that happened to you. Like, with that book for you and then Rebecca for me, it's like, I can understand why people like this. Like, I have nothing against the book itself, but not for me.
I get why people like it, and I get why it made the splash that it made. And I like The Bell Jar. Love that book. Yeah, I thought that book was amazing. This just didn't click for me. Finally, let's talk about what we are currently reading. Oh, yeah. I have, like I mentioned, been pushing through the audiobook of Slouching Towards Bethlehem, but I'm also now reading Serious Concerns by Wendy Cope, which is a poetry collection that I'm enjoying so far. I'm really not far into it at all, but it's got one of my favorite all-time poems called The Orange, which I would like to read to you now. At lunchtime, I bought a huge orange. The size of it made us all laugh. I peeled it and shared it with Robert and Dave. They got quarters and I had a half. And that orange, it made me so happy, as ordinary things often do. Just lately. The shopping, a walk in the park. This is peace and contentment. It's new. The rest of the day was quite easy. I did all the jobs on my list and enjoyed them and had some time over. I love you. I'm glad I exist. Yay!
That might be my favorite poem now.
Isn't that amazing?
I had a huge orange.
At lunchtime, I bought a huge orange.
I wasn't expecting that. That really caught me off guard.
I love that poem.
Especially after hearing the Sylvia Plath, which was like, the newts are white. Like, what are you talking about? Yes. And then just to go into something totally normal. That's more my style of poetry, awesome. For sure. I understood that.
Yes, exactly.
I love you. I'm happy to be alive. That's great.
I love you. I'm glad I exist.
That's so good.
It's so good. So fantastic. I'm enjoying that. What about you?
Well,
what
are you reading? I am finally transitioning into actually reading some spooky books, because I've decided to just take matters into my own hands and just pick books that I know are actually going to be spooky. So the first one is a book that's a mashed potato book. I've been meaning to read this for years now, and that's Out by Natsuo Kirino. This is a fairly large translated Japanese book. It's translated by Steven Snyder. It's funny, every time I hear a name of a translator, I'm like, I know that name, but I can't remember what other books he's translated. But I am 87 pages into this so far, and I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it so far. So this one is about four women who all work the night shift at this like lunch packing place. Work on like a factory that's, you know, a conveyor belt where one of them puts rice in and then the other person puts in the meat and the other person puts in sauce or whatever, and they make like thousands of these meals per night from midnight to 5:30 a.m. And all four of the women are like not satisfied with their lives, like things aren't good for them. A lot of them have debts that they're, you know, they're only working this job because they have to. And at the beginning of the book, one of them kills her husband. And so that's kind of where things kick off and things get kind of spooky. And she kind of asks one of her coworkers for help with the situation. And so they're all kind of getting roped into it now. And so I'm like, okay, I'm interested to see where this is going to go. So
that's cool.
A little bit of murder, which is always...
What is that? It's from a while ago, right? Oh, yeah. It says it's published in 1997.
Yes. Yeah.
I've just looked it up. He is the main publisher for Yoko Ogawa. And he published, translated, The Memory Police, The Housekeeper and the Professor, which I know you read as well, right? And a lot of her backlist stuff.
Okay.
He's also done Ryo Murakami.
Oh.
And, yeah.
Maybe he translates some of the spookier stuff a little bit.
Yeah.
Slightly creepy. Interesting. Well, that's cool. But yeah, so I just started this a couple days ago and I'm still pretty early on, but I can already tell I'm going to love it, which is like classic mashed potato. You know, like that's why I've been saving it, is because I knew it was going to be real
good.
And I feel like now is the perfect time to be reading it. I'm glad that I'm actually diving in. I think I've put it on TBRs for the past like 2 or 3 Octobers. So it feels good to finally be reading it. But I'm also reading another book. I'm listening to an audiobook, and it's another horror book. Woo! The Between by Tanana Reeve Du. This one was published in the 90s as well, actually. So I'm reading 2 90s books right now, which is pretty fun. And this one also in the preface... She talks about, like, because this is like a modern reprint of it. And so she talks about black horror, because that's what this book is. And she talks about, like, Jordan Peele's Get Out and all that kind of stuff. And apparently she actually teaches, like, a college course about that movie now. Somebody told me that on Patreon. I was like, what? That's so cool. So she seems just, like, a really cool author. I'm excited to learn more about her once I've kind of finished the book, and I'll read more about her. But, yeah, this book... So I'm still pretty early in, so I don't have like the full picture yet. But what I understand about this book is that the main character, when he was younger, he was swimming and he was about to drown, and his grandma saved him, and then the grandma died instead. And so he's kind of like being haunted now by the fact that he was supposed to die, a little bit Final Destination type of vibe, but I think a little bit more nuanced than those movies. So that's kind of what the premise of the book is, but I haven't seen any of like the spooky stuff yet. It's kind of still just getting set up and getting to know the characters, which is good. That's another good thing in a horror book, is actually knowing the characters before they, you know, bad things start happening to them. So I'm excited about it so far. But yeah, and the audiobook is really good. So
what would you say is the scariest book you've ever read?
Scariest book? Ugh, that's tough. I don't often find books to be scary. I would say, like, I probably the most gory book I've read, though, I could tell you that for sure. That would be Gerald's Game by Stephen King.
Oh, okay.
That book and the movie have one of the most disgusting scenes I've ever read or seen. So that was pretty spooky. But no, I'll have to think about that. Maybe next week I can come more prepared with a scary book, because, yeah, I don't often get scared. Although 172 Hours on the Moon by Johan Harstad was a book that you and I read when we were teenagers, and that was pretty scary. Yeah. That was pretty scary.
I bet you if we reread it, it would not feel scary anymore.
I reread it a couple years ago. It wasn't that scary, but it's because I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
It was scary in like the unknown is really scary in that book, because you don't know what's possible until suddenly it has happened. And it's pretty scary. So I do recommend that book if anybody wants something scary. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So you're working through a few things. Yeah. I'm also working through a few things. Who the heck knows what may happen next week? Huh? What will we be talking about?
Who knows?
Lord only knows. All right, we're going to wrap it up here, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Mm-hmm. I do have one piece of housekeeping. Our book club. Our bookmark club. That's the one. Our bookmark club is a quarterly bookmark subscription. Mm-hmm. We're really proud of it. We have a lot of fun doing it. Basically, we team up with artists a couple times a year. They're only shipped out quarterly, and I think it's only $12. That's pretty affordable. Damn, good for us.
Pretty cool.
Even if it's 15, I'm still like, that's nice. It's 2 really high quality bookmarks and 2 stickers that get shipped out to everyone every quarter. And you only can sign up to it 1 time a year. And that time is coming. It is November 6th. to November 20th. So we're letting you know now in advance, but also because you might listen to this episode in a couple of weeks and it will be time. So we're a little bit preemptive. It's not up yet, but if you would like to know when that is, stay tuned to listening to the eps and also follow us on Instagram, because we will share there for sure when the window has opened.
Yep.
But yeah, we've already like confirmed a few of the artists for next year. Oh boy. It's looking good. It's looking very good.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They're going to be beautiful things to behold. But there you go. That's a little bit of housekeeping. We're now going to go and record our Patreon mini podcast, Books Unbucket, where we talk about the movies or shows that we've been watching lately. If you want to check that out, it's at patreon.com/booksunbound. We'll see you there.
Bye.
Bye.